The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me on the Breakfast Grill this morning, Datino Azima Abdurrahim, chairman of the chairperson of the Parent Action Group for Education Malaysia, PAGE, and Zamir Zulkifli, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. Both of them involved in an issue that's core to the Malaysian dream, I dare say, which is education, seen as a key to upward mobility. Now, when I want to begin with some numbers, the question is whether those numbers tell us enough about what's going on. The education allocation and budget 2018 was some 61.6 billion ringgit. And when you look at the higher education segment of that, they received an increase in 13% of their funding. Now, all that sounds very positive, but there's a lot of concern about where education in this country is going, whether it's equipping our young with marketable skills, or whether it's creating well-rounded human beings, whether it's contributing to national unity, or in fact pulling us apart. All of that is in the mix. So I want to begin with you, Datin Azima. If the question is, the conversation that we've been having about education, is it a deeply politicized one? Is it one that draws partisans to, you know, either side of the aisle and not create a space for a kind of bipartisan approach?
Okay, it's great that you started with the numbers, because I'd like to elaborate on that. It appears that we have a rather big education budget, because I think that amounts about 20% of our GDP. But if you look at just primary and secondary school, of that amount that goes into education, only 10% goes into primary and secondary school. And 90% goes to the IPTA. So, I mean, if you're spending so little at the primary and secondary level, don't you wonder why we have 160,000 unemployed graduates?
Right. So it's a question of the foundations, that we're not investing enough in foundational level education.
Yeah, and not only that, if you look at the OECD figures, OECD spends 147% on education expenditure of the per capita GDP, whereas we're only spending 12%. And even if you look at Thailand, they're spending 43%. So while it appears large at national level, if you compare it to the rest of the world, we're quite pathetic.
Okay, Datin Azima has skirted my question about the politicization of the conversation on education. So, Zamir, I'm going to force you to answer this question, because, and I'm going to come back to you, Datin, shortly. What is it, or is it true, the perception that the conversation is politicized? Do you think that's true?
Morning, Sharad. Yeah, I would say yes, probably, as well. And I think it's down to so much animosity between the two parties right now, or two coalitions. It's very hard for them to sit down and agree on the same topic sometimes. So that's a bit of a shame, especially when it's the future of our students that we want to talk about. An interesting concept that I've seen in the UK is that there's a parliamentary committee that looks into teacher performance or education system performance, and the school inspectorate is actually reports, as an independent body, reports to parliament rather than the Ministry of Education or Department of Education. So the UK has a system that has structures that allow both parties to come together.
Okay, back to you, Datin Azima. Do you, and the question of politicization, is it the kind of politicization that's only about the one-upmanship that happens between political parties, or is it a deeper one? Is it about the way in which this country imagines itself? Because there are people who say vernacular education is very important, they're pulling in that direction. Others will say, well, if we're going to stick together the country, we need a national education system that is homogenous, that gives everybody the same experience, and therefore produces people who see themselves in others. So, I mean, is it at that fundamental level that we don't agree about what education can do for us as a nation?
Well, if you look at both manifestos, they seem to agree that we need a diversity of schools, you know, but every now and then, the idea of one national school system keeps cropping up. And I noticed that, I don't see why the Ministry of Education needs to pander to these ultra-nationalists, you know, because I don't see why we should produce one type of student or one type of graduate when we should be celebrating our diversity. You know, and also back to the political situation. Of course, we all know that teachers are a major, huge vote bank, and of course, ministers in and out, they always have to, you know, consider what teachers think, because they are such an important voter, you know. But there are also parents who are voters too. And we also want, you know, our education to be to get our children the jobs that they are out there. And if you're looking at the situation now, where there is so much disruption everywhere, are our children and students being prepared for that disruption in the near future?
Zamir, is there a monolithic system, or do we have diversity in the system, you know, and or is there a kind of antagonism to diversity, do you think, coming from policymakers?
Actually, interesting part, the policymakers, from my perspective, actually want to maintain the diversity. Part of my role is also I was selected as a TN50 Youth Ambassador, and a lot of the town hall and discussions that we did in person, a lot of the youths did ask for a single common platform. Not coming from a nationalist or conservative point of view, but more coming from a unity point of view, to drop these labels or identities that are associated with race, and while celebrating it, but celebrating more importantly that we're Malaysian. But then a survey was done by the TN50 committee, and the results came out from the survey that people preferred to maintain the diversity of schools. So there was
a bit of institutional separation, meaning like you have the vernacular schools, you have correct. Your religious schools and such, right?
Yeah, so that was quite funny though. In person, everyone was voicing out like we want a common platform for the races to integrate. And then the data from a survey, which did, I can't remember the numbers, but that showed a lot more skew towards like maintain the vernacular and religious schools.
So, Dadin, what do you think is going on? Are we schizophrenic? Is this in fact a pie that we can both have and eat? I mean, the unity pie and the diversity pie.
Yeah, I don't see why we can't. You know, how we're going to do it is still tricky. No one really has found a solution. But I think we are fine with the diversity in schools. And choice is good as well. And we should offer choice. And I think as long as there is less provocation towards race and religion, I think we are quite a united people, actually.
Okay, Zamir, Danton Azima mentioned just now, you know, teachers as a vote bank, and I think that's a reality of all politics, right? And politicians speak to, and policymakers do that as well. They speak to particular vested interests. Do you think there are vested interests that are holding us back, that are not allowing us to apply ourselves in the most creative ways to think about the solutions that we need to find for the challenges of kind of global education?
Yeah. So from my perspective, I've not seen that as the holdback, actually. I've seen in meetings and discussions a lot of thought being put into why isn't it changing. Where it comes down to, I think there's just a big gap between the policymakers or politicians at the top and the teachers on the ground. And sometimes there is a gap of role modeling or culture setting that is missing. A point that I'd like to make is actually instructional leadership. So, for example, when a policymaker comes into a school, what do they look for? Most of the time, it's very superficial, surface-level things. Are they in order with cleanliness? But I've not seen key policymakers or decision-makers at district, state, or federal level step into a classroom and just observe if a teacher is actually teaching and students are learning. And there's a lot of fanfare that comes around a big visit that's like not contributing towards a learning environment.
What's your experience, Tatiana Zima, about the way in which policymakers get a sense of what's actually happening on the ground? Are they detached? Are they just trying to design something that looks good on paper but can be delivered on the ground? Are they out of touch? As Amir suggested, you know, there's so much, there's a lot of drama and spectacle around school visits and not necessarily about learning the realities on the ground.
Yes, I think we are fantastic at coming up with policies. Our policies are perfect, but when it comes to implementation, it is imperfect. And I think that we should look at teachers as implementers and whether or not they're capable of implementing and enforcing these types of policies which are coming down. And I think that we have to look at raising the bar for teachers. We have to look at the bad teachers. No one wants to talk about bad teachers, but they're there.
Okay, so these are the teachers that I think in the past we've known that people have failed, the English teachers don't come pass English tests and so on and so forth, right? People who didn't perhaps get the training they needed to get or should never have been allowed to be part of the system because they didn't have either the aptitude or the skill level. That's an important point. We're going to come back to that. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation. You can tweet us at BFM Radio or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. I'm speaking to Datin Noor Azima Abdul Rahim, chairperson of the Parent Action Group for Education Malaysia, PAGE, and Zamir Zulkifli, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. Next up, we talk about those teachers and what can be done. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning and welcome back. If you just joined us, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Datin Noor Azima Abdul Rahim, chairperson of the Parent Action Group for Education Malaysia, PAGE, and Zamir Zulkifli, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. Remember, you can always join this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us on 018-789-8899. The conversation today is about education and the political parties. So actually, we're going to have to talk about the manifestos in a minute. One, and I've noted that that Pakatan Harapan does address right at the top of their section on education the question of teachers and providing teachers support. But with that support, and I'm going to go to you, Datin Azima, because you started with you ended with the question of bad teachers. You can give teachers support, but also there must be a reality check on what's happening in the teaching profession and how can politicians do both. Give them the support, but also raise expectations on what teachers must deliver to the system.
Last year, I think about October, November, there was a question in Parliament, I think, about teacher absenteeism. And the minister came out to say that, yes, we actually had a school staff in a rural school who was absent for 2,002 days.
Well, that's a couple of years there.
Yes. And he said that, yes, among the, the negativities of teacher performance is that of absenteeism. And he said 54% of the problems of teachers is absenteeism. So I think if it is as serious as that, we should be looking at teachers who are absent and maybe thinking about replacing them.
That's interesting. So 2,002 days, I wonder if they must have been still on the payroll, and that would have been the problem. Yep. Now, before, we can dwell on all the granular aspect, right, of the details of the problems, but can we maybe pull back a little and look at the two manifestos? Zamir, what have you seen? What stood out for you when you looked at both the Barisan Nasional and Pakatan Harapan manifestos? I don't know if you've seen the Gagasan Sejahtera manifesto, and I don't know if it has a section on education, but let's focus on the two main competitors in the race coming up next month. What did you see? What struck you?
In the Barisan Nasional, there was a lot more focus on IR4, Industrial Revolution 4, putting on digital out there, whereas the Pakatan Harapan focused on that more at the economy and job workforce section, so it didn't call out what was happening in the school system that will come out. I found it really interesting as well about localization and diversity. Pakatan Harapan called out that we will allow greater adaptation of content at the local site for Sabah and Sarawak versus Barisan Nasional saying we will make Sabah and Sarawak culture and history more prominent for everyone to learn.
So that's putting stuff into the curriculum.
Yeah. So it's about, but it's quite interesting take as well, right? I like the point of local adaptation and space. Because I think there's, we always try to force everything. We got to make the curriculum full. We got to put more things in the curriculum. But I think there's greater benefit in saying that, no, let's give more space for learning to happen. Let kids learn how to learn rather than just having a whole list of languages put in. I also just want to emphasize, both manifestos, in my view, probably approached education from a very technical point of view. But actually, we're facing an adaptive challenge, right? Like, when you change one piece of the problem, the nature of the problem itself evolves. And for me, I think the biggest value add that we can focus on is actually culture. A lot of the schools I go to, there's a lot of culture of fear within the teachers and the students around education. And that's not how we should be learning, right? We learn when we're having joy, fun, and somehow that's missing completely. So I would like to put a challenge out there to both parties to think about what kind of culture they want to create in our schools.
That's fascinating, because I do believe the Pakatan Harapan does address, at least at the higher education level, the issue of the Universities and University Colleges Act 1971, and they're calling for the repeal of that. Datin Azima, do you see that as well? I mean, do you think the issue of the school culture and what's happening, I mean, the sphere, do you sense that as well?
Yeah, but we have to ask also if there is really this culture of fear. Who is actually propagating it? You know, could it be the teachers themselves? So we're back to the teachers. We should be looking at teacher professional development rather than spending on infrastructure. It's easy to spend on infrastructure because this is what can be seen. It's visible, and this is probably what brings in the votes. But when you spend on teacher professional development, you don't see it until much later. You know, so we should look at bringing back the good old days of the nobility of the teaching profession. You know, we should make the people think that to be a teacher is the best thing anyone can be, you know, and it should be everyone's first choice for a career.
Yeah, you know? I found that a bit also in the Pakatan Harapan, they called out multiple spots, get the corporate sector to focus on infrastructure support. And then the one place where corporates are supporting for teacher development is the Trust School program,
yep.
But it was then criticized as being too expensive.
Yeah.
But the additional funding is actually just coming from the corporate sector. Mm-hmm. So there was actually a big shift towards focusing on what Datin said about culture, training, and development.
Yes. Well, speaking of, because that is, I think, a very interesting area, but we're running out of time. So I just want to come back to maybe some of the contentious issues. Like you mentioned, as I made the question of adding the history of Sabah and Sarawak into the national curriculum and such. But Sarawak, of course, associated with a push towards getting English back as a medium of instruction. We also have Tuanku, the Sultan of Johor, speaking about the need for English back in the education. So you see these regional pulls, Johor and Sarawak, and of course Page is in the forefront of that, championing the return of English as a medium for instruction. Do either manifesto address that question, Datin?
Well, of course, Barisan has said that they will look into opening up English medium schools, but Pakatan hasn't. But I think that just to avoid repercussions from ultranationalists, I think we should restrict English medium schools to just producing English teachers. Because in a Malay medium system, you cannot produce the best English teachers.
Zamir, your views on this?
My views is actually, I want to shift the conversation and get the kids to share their views, right? Like a lot of the kids out there, they realize that they actually want to learn English that we engage and speak to. But I think it's adults that always make policies. So again, coming back to culture, in a school, do teachers and principals actually listen to what the students themselves want?
Well, what are the practicalities of giving students a voice? I've never been a teacher. Well, I actually have taught in universities. Me, it would be a horrifying thought to let the kids run wild and have a say in things. But then I'm, I think authoritarian in my impulses. But but is there a real way of getting children's voices into policymaking?
Yeah, plenty. Now, let's not talk about big policymaking, right? Let's just talk about a classroom. There is going to be a big power shift that happens between a teacher and a student. But if you want to get learning to happen, one teacher is not going to be able to do it for 40 kids. The 40 kids have different levels of competencies, readiness, And then can you use, for example, in certain subjects, a kid can be better at public speaking. He can be coaching kids on public speaking. Because when we talk about like independent thinking, we talk about critical thinking, we don't allow that to happen in the classroom just yet. And that's, it's going to be challenging for all of us. Even for me, I would say I'm leaning towards more authoritarian approaches in my style, but I need to make that shift and role model that in order for the kids to have that when they leave school.
Dante, one thing that I'm struck by in terms of the conversation that's happening, we have people like yourself who represent, you know, the civil society. We have politicians on both sides weighing in on education, but we don't hear very much from educationists. I can't even think of a single educationist, whether they're based in universities or whatever, weighing in on the question of pedagogical strategies, education strategies that will take us, you know, into the 21st century. I mean, the things that Zamir is talking about. What are educationists missing? Those experts on pedagogical methods?
I don't think so. They are around. You probably haven't found them, that's all. But they are around. I mean, in our collaborations with the Ministry of Education, there are always educationists in attendance. So we do get a sizable, advice from them.
So, okay, but is the system then a reflection of their thinking? Are we getting the best thinking going on in terms of educational innovations, Amir?
Yes. I think the experts are out there. They are in the policy making, etc. But again, here's that skill set I'm talking about. In a very, very large system, we have the policies right already, but it's the change management and transformation management culture that's missing. And that's a bit more of a business or administrative skill, right? How do you shift a whole organization of 420,000 staff members into a different culture that you want to see? That's no longer a pedagogical skill. It changes. It's a new skill set that's needed to be brought in.
Dante Azima, going back to the manifestos now, what did you see in it that either disheartened you or excited you?
Disheartened, yes, because, we've been talking about science and technology. None of the manifestos specifically covered that, even though we have inquiry-based science education being slowly practiced and implemented in schools. There was no mention of that in either.
So for me, I'll just jump in very quickly. So what excited me the most was actually a very small line in the BN manifesto around parenting classes. 3 million for parenting classes. Now, parenting can go either way, but a fundamental...
What's a parenting class? I mean...
How to be a parent.
Okay, but you don't want to teach young people how to be a parent
early, but this is for the parents. So children, how do you support your kids that are in school?
So these are classes for parents on parenting. Okay.
For kids in primary or secondary level, right? But a fundamental... The principle behind that is social and emotional learning. And as we adopt like science, technology, AI, etc., right, one thing that's missing is that how do we be more human and how do we focus a lot more on the social emotional learning that's happening inside of us when we work in teams and when we collaborate. And that's also a missing piece.
Okay, we're running out of time. Quick, like a one statement, one word response from both of you. Are you hopeful that things will change for the better after GE14, Datin Azima?
Yes, I think we have to concentrate on the teachers, maybe corporatize the teaching profession and take politics out of education.
Samir?
I'm always hopeful regardless of when.
So it must be something in your education. Okay, I've been speaking to Datin Noor Azima Abdulrahim, chairperson of Parent Action Group for Education, or PAGE, and Samir Zulkifli, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
I'm Sharad Kutan. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.